So we just got intro'd last week, and we talked about money, and just we were getting into it. Our case scenario at the very beginning. We've got John and Linda. You know, so John sees the 70-inch name brand TV while picking up some milk. You'll remember that we said, how could this conflict have been avoided? There were several that agreed, just don't have John get the milk. Right? Don't have John get the milk. So he goes through this scenario where he applies for the credit card. He gets $50 off. It was accepted. It's a sign from God. He brings it home. A great day of rejoicing. He's killed the lion and brought it home. And unfortunately, Linda did not share the excitement. She exploded at John, demanding he take it back. In the past, he's given in, but he fought back. This is my money, and I will spend it my way. And that was kind of our starting scenario for, like, conflicting over money. And we got into, like, kind of like one of the key principles when we think about money, and that's stewardship. Okay, would someone want to read a couple of these scriptures? I want to hit those again. So on the top of page 2. Okay. At the top of page 2. Cole, you want to read Exodus 19:5?
Now then, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine.
Yeah. And we read, behold, to the Lord your God belong heaven and the highest heavens, the earth and all that is in it. And so, how does that like shape our view of, right? How are John and Linda supposed to see money? Because in the beginning, it's my money. She's arguing how they should spend it. What's the change that needs to happen there?
It's all provided from God. They're just stewards.
Yeah, it's all provided from God. And so that totally shifts kind of our view of money, is that when we talk about money, there isn't any of your money, her money, my money. It's all God's money, and we're all stewards of that money. And so with that kind of groundwork, that framework, that foundation, we talked about some principles. So if we are God's stewards, then we should manage it the way that he advises. It'd be a wise way of managing money. Okay? So you can look if you want to cheat ahead. But do you remember, we just jumped into that first principle. What was one principle that we wanted to see? Remember? You can look ahead if you weren't here last week. Yeah. Oh, no. The perpetual teacher's dilemma. The marker is dead.
Oh, man.
It's all right. We'll second attempt. Second attempt. Okay, let's have this. Oh, that one works. Okay, so we've got the don'ts, right? So we don't want to be too rich, and we don't want to be too poor. We kind of talked about a word that was the positive, right? What do we want when we think about... what were the danger? If we're too rich, do you remember what's that verse? Proverbs 38:9. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that's needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. So what were the dangers?
Too rich, you rely on yourself.
Mm-hmm. And too poor? You want to steal, right? And so there was kind of an in-between. We talked about how that was contentment, right? If we're content with what we have, we're thankful for what God's given us. We're not looking forward to steal to gain more. We're not overly confident, believing that I've built this whole kingdom myself. So we do want to have contentment. It's kind of the thing we're looking for there. Biblical, do you remember how we defined biblical poverty, right? What is it? What were they content with? What does he need in the Proverbs 30 there?
Food.
Food, right, yeah. Well, I think we read another verse about how if we have food and clothing, we'll be content with that. So it's a very, very low... I think it it's an easy bar for most of us to reach that sense of being content. Okay, so we were just getting into another one. So page 3, I think this is where we ended somewhere last time. So the next thing we don't want to be too rich, too poor, and we want to avoid what? Get rich. Now, get rich what?
Quick.
Get rich quick. Watch out for that, yeah. Don't get rich quick. And so what's the biblical alternative to that? Right? It doesn't say you can't gain and make money, right? What's the alternative? Let's look at Proverbs there. How's it described?
Faithful man.
Faithful man. Mm-hmm. Being faithful and doing what in the other scripture?
Little by little.
Little by little. Mm-hmm. So there's passages that we talk about, and we see it in this next one about working hard, that it's encouraged to gain little by little. It's encouraged to work hard and to build up, but not instantly. And so why do you think that is? Let's talk about that. Why is getting rich quick so dangerous, or can be so harmful?
Because if you get it quick, you'll lose it quick.
Yeah, easy come, easy go. Yes, that's very true.
You haven't developed the discipline to steward the money well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You don't really know what it takes, what the value of that money is. Have you guys ever had, come into some money that it's unexpected, right? And it's like, what do we do with this money? Or do you know of anyone that's had that for some reason or other? What kind of questions come up when that happens? How do you deal with that?
I think about the proverbial one-hit wonder band. You make it big, you know, make their millions, and they think we're going to get this every year because the hits are going to be endless from us.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't really pan out.
Yeah.
And their financial prospects were not as bright as they originally thought. They never learned the discipline.
Yeah.
What to do with the money when you have it. They just
right.
Assume we don't need it because it's always going to be there.
Exactly. Yeah. What are some ways that can sometimes happen where we come into maybe some money quickly, but it doesn't end up to be something that is sustainable?
Tax refund
or stimulus packages 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah.
All right. We're rich. Because we have 8 kids.
Sisters, half sisters, we all share a dad. When our dad died, they got inheritances, and I did not for various reasons. I currently have the most money out of all of them. They spent it, it's gone, it's
yes.
Not coming back. They're,
yes.
They're back in poverty, and not poverty according to the biblical definition. But
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, inheritance is a big one. We were talking this week about that, about. And kind of we'll talk about this maybe when we talk about retirement. But inheritance can be tricky because it can be very divisive amongst the remaining heirs. There was a book on it called Splitting Hairs or Splitting Heirs. You know, kind of that idea is that I've heard many horror stories of people, their parents die, some are believers, some aren't. Various reasons, it just is very divisive who gets what. Can be. We'll talk about that when we talk about wills, I think, as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you talked about the gentleman last week. I don't know if that's a real story, but like who won the lottery or whatever, and even the divisiveness.
Yeah.
Of like everybody wanted something.
Yeah, it's like, an interesting story. Yeah, it was this trucker, and he bought a Powerball, and he won. I can't remember the exact number. It was like double-digit millions. You know, 20 million, 80 million, whatever it was. And how at first, you know, I'm just going to be the same generous guy. You know, and he's buying things for people and his family and all the people he knows, and just how over time all of his relationships kind of get warped and tainted by this money and who wants this, and how it kind of destroyed their lives, and they didn't know who was really their friends, and people were coming out of everywhere to try to get money, and they had no desire or intention to work anymore, and so what do they do with all their time? It was just a very, very sad story, and just how it just destroyed so many people's lives.
Yeah, I think the other another one too is like a lot of multi-level marketing.
Mm-hmm.
They sell you on the promise that you can make a ton of money if you get a bunch of people working for you.
Yes.
So with this minimal effort, you can just maximal return.
That's right.
And you know, I've seen a lot of people just kind of get basically taken advantage of because they have to buy all this inventory and stuff like that, and they're just saddled with a lot of debt afterwards.
Yep.
So it may not be you actually get the money.
That's the promise.
But it's the promise
of it
that kind of draws people into
And a lot of times that's not sustainable. It can be a like quick, you know, thing, and then that product or whatever becomes popular.
Yeah.
And you've gotten used to it.
Yeah.
Even the ones who are successful.
Something's selling amazing, so you buy 1,000 of them. And you sell 100. And, oh, no. No one wants that anymore. So, yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with planning and having business and trying to build your fortune. But the Bible really talks about being faithful and working and working hard little by little to make it grow. And so when we approach our stewardship, that ought to be how we talk about our decisions. And I think one more if you guys followed it all, there was the GameStop short sale type of thing. It's a stock, right, where people were buying it, and it was just going up, and they were just going to hold on to it, knowing that at some point, when people were going to sell this stock off, a few people, whoever sold off first, would make a ton of money, and everyone else would lose what they had into it. And so there's that whole, it was interesting but sad to follow the story as it took place. So that's another area in stocks and investments where kind of day trading, just I'm gonna put money in this and it's shooting up, and then it's almost like the lottery itself as well. So something to be careful about. So we also want to work hard, right? And what's our hard? And what was the don't, right? So the opposite of that, the biblical. You're going to what?
Be a sluggard.
Sluggard. Lazy sluggards. So let's take a second. We'll read through these verses. Proverbs 6, 6 through 8. Jason, you want to read that one?
Yep. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief, officer, or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest.
Yeah. And then we have the soul the sluggard craves and gets nothing, and the soul of the diligent is richly supplied. And the hand of the diligent will rule, and the slothful will put to forced labor. Okay, I think the forced labor is like a debtor, right? They're in debt. They owe their labor. And so let's look at this next case study. So we're not, it's not the big screen TV this time. So Mike and Jessica love their church. Since they joined 7 years ago, they've seen significant spiritual growth in their family. But one day, Mike's boss let them know that they are downsizing. Most of his department is being terminated, but Mike is given a choice. He can stay on in a smaller capacity for about half the salary, or if he's willing to relocate to another state and commit to a 5-year agreement, the company will keep him on at the same position and salary. So I guess the first question is, how would you counsel Mike? And then the second one would be, what factors should they consider in making their decision? So think about kind of the principles we've been talking about so far. What are some things you would counsel Mike with, and what are some maybe things they should be considering?
I guess my question would be, are those the only two choices? Is there not a plan C or D?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Both with his employment and then just outside his employment, right? Those are the maybe the two choices with his job. Maybe there's a third, or maybe there's something completely outside of that job.
Do we know how long Mike has been in his role?
At the current job?
Mm-hmm.
We do not. No.
Okay.
Is that something they ought to consider? How come?
Well, it's different if Mike's been there for 6 months versus 7 years.
Yeah.
I suspect, just based on their language, that he's been there since they approached him to say go on and to a different state.
Yeah.
But it's also possible that he could be young and they'd be willing to go to a different state.
Mm-hmm.
Just thinking from a business side of it. But
yeah.
There's a lot of ways to read into that.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I would do. I'd say no. I'd go find a different position.
Yeah, so you'd have a third option to be finding a different job.
Yeah, because that you're losing money either way along this path.
Mm-hmm.
If you're relocating, uprooting, and going away from your church and all that, that's the second option, and that could be the better of the two. Or it could be, yeah.
Yeah.
That's tough.
It is.
Rock and hard place there.
Yeah, it is.
Well, there's like, is he going from $200,000 to $100,000?
Yeah, the amount might be.
$80,000 to $40,000. You know, that's a significant.
Mm-hmm. Or 40 to 20.
Yeah, I mean, can they still maintain their level of lifestyle? And I think you look at it. What's the most important thing? You know, is their priorities being involved in the church? Well, then you find a way to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
However, maybe they're moving to some place and they know that there's a really great church there, so maybe they move because.
Right.
You know, they know that they're moving to a good place with a solid church, and they can continue their ministry there.
Yeah, you bring up two good things. One is the level of provision, and you mentioned, I think, that their standard kind of living, how will that be affected? And then also just considering if they have one option of where they can move to, do they have two options? Is there several places? And do they know of what's the church like there?
Yeah.
Right? Were you going to add?
Yeah, no, I mean, that was kind of what I was thinking too, is the value there, because if you move to another location and it's like there's not a church body to plug into, then watch your family spiral down. A good church is of immense value.
Yeah, and what, go ahead. Yeah,
I was just thinking, like, when you're confronted with such a change, whether it's a good change, like you all of a sudden came into something that you didn't expect, or you're going down potentially, it kind of forces you to be on the same page and communicate priorities, like of either how you're going to downsize or how to appropriate, because, you know, it just puts more pressure. It's just not the same thing anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like this is a trick question.
Because why?
Because, you know, like, we don't know, does Jessica have a job? Is she well established in her job?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have children at play?
Mm-hmm.
Do... like, the other state that they're moving to, what's the cost of living there? Like, are they going to be at the poverty level, even if they're at the same salary level? Like, I mean, like, here in Kansas, you know, we're going to complain about inflation, but I'm glad I'm here and not in Massachusetts, you know, where a gallon of milk is $8. You know, so I feel like we cannot make a conclusive, deductive reasoning based off.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I think that you've gotten the trick in the sense that, right, the goal is that, right, what are the things that they ought to be thinking about and how ought we to counsel them? Because there's definitely not enough information here. And I think that you a lot of those questions you brought up, kind of, I think at first we were thinking about it solely in terms of Mike and how much is money he's making, right? So what we also think about, you know, his wife, what's her situation? Is she working or not? And you mentioned the kids. How will the kids be affected or not by this? What are some ways in which the kids, based on all whatever choice they make, if they have kids, let's say?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, uprooting your family, moving. I think one thing that could be interesting is just if he's in a smaller capacity, what else could fill his time?
Exactly.
Could he invest himself more into the church? Could he invest himself more into his children? Is there another side something that could fill that void or help fill potentially part of that void that would allow him more time with the family, with the church.
Yeah, and I think that if as it says here, he can stay on in a smaller capacity for about half the salary. So if he's working half the time at half the salary, he basically is getting the same hourly wage, but he may have an opportunity to find another work that could supplement, or, I mean, there's other options there as well for working.
In any marriage, like, these types of scenarios are going to come up, you know, over a lifetime of a career, but anytime that that's happened for us, it's like the perfect opportunity to say, okay, what do we want our family to be about? What's valuable to us, our church, our schools, our friends, like, and weighing that against potential income, career moves, like, that always gives a perfect opportunity in marriage to kind of reevaluate, like, what's important to our family.
Yeah, and I think Jessica, you mentioned it earlier when we were talking about, like, knowing how to manage your money without just adding work, right? Because we think about, you know, our most valuable, right, is the time, the days that we're given. And, you know, you might say you've got work, family, you know. And sometimes we think about, like, how our time is going to be divided amongst these things, and if I put more time into one, then it's taking away from. I think one way that we can sometimes benefit ourselves is, you know, just talking about ways that you can invest your time both in your family and ministry at the same time. Looking for ways that your ministry and your family can, you can minister together in a sense. And so that if there's a place or a way in which, what's it, Mike and Jessica, can have that same time as a family and be ministering as well, and then try to determine from there what is the right amount of work that they need so that they can kind of keep a good balance here, right? I think that is true, like both of you said, it's a lot of talk about priorities. I think that there's some families where the amount of work that the husband does, that the wife does, depending upon their situation, their kids, those hours aren't going to be the same necessarily from couple to couple and from season to season. There may be times where he's working 40 hours a week and seasons where it's 50 or 60. Maybe there's 30 hours a week. So constantly communicating about what has God given us in our opportunities, right, for ministry, for our family, for our work, and how are we to be, right, faithful with those opportunities. Add anything?
Yeah, I think salary is not everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's more to the decision-making matrix, and and yeah, I think it's kind of like if you move to another town, it's like moving to another planet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is there going to be oxygen there or not? It's not like we're going to move to Mars and then figure out how to live there. You definitely want to be, you know, very shrewd in what you're looking for. And I think the other thing, too, is just where are the kids? Like, if your kids are in college, they're not just going to up and leave and follow you
right
to wherever you go as well. So.
Right. And there are other, and again, there may be other family ties, like, say, Mike and Jessica have aging parents.
Yeah.
Right? So there's all this, do they have this responsibility or a desire to be around and stay in that certain location? So.
And that's not to say that moving is a wrong decision. There's just more to it than money.
Yeah. Can you guys think of reasons why? I think in general we've talked about a lot of reasons why maybe it wouldn't be a good idea to move. Can you think of any reasons that, considerations that it might be in favor of moving? What do you think might have to be there in that talk to say, you know, this might be a real option?
Well, like, let's say you have the job there already.
Mm-hmm.
And for instance, in the church, it's like, oh, we have a sister church there. You know, I already know. I've heard they're in that, they're pastor like Ironman or something like that. It's like, pretty sure we're going to a solid body.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's like one.
Exactly.
One,
yeah.
Maybe it's late in his career and that's where they want to retire. Maybe God's sending them to paradise and, you know, it's where they want to retire.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we need to remember too that we're all moving, we're all temporarily members of our churches.
Yeah.
We'll all either leave either by dying, by moving, right? One way or the other, we're all temporarily passing through. And so sometimes it's you see this more acutely in, for example, like college ministry, where you see them for 4 years and then they're off.
Yeah.
Right? And so you invest and you build and you grow and knowing that they're going to leave in a sense. And so there's a certain sense in like you said, you don't know how long someone's going to be with you.
Well, I think another situation is this is a super young family,
mm-hmm.
and you know the wife wants to stay home, and to be able to afford that,
mm-hmm.
They just couldn't make it. You know, you're talking going from 60,000 to 30,000,
mm-hmm.
and that
right.
just is not possible.
Right. I think too that there may be again the. I don't know if we mentioned it, but the type of work that the husband does, it may be that there's just, they're in a, such a small community or environment that it can't sustain that job, whereas if it were a larger city, I know that my brother, he did computer animation, and so for a long time there in California, and there just wasn't anything in the Midwest to do that type of job, and so he kind of wanted to return to, you know, the Earth instead of another planet that's like out in California. And so they ended up finding something in Oklahoma, but he's gone through multiple changes and the company's been bought out and he's contracted from home and had to be very creative in how to make that work.
Yeah.
But it's allowed them to be closer to grandparents and those type of things.
That's like with our son. What he does, there's only 5 cities in the United States where he can go. So you have those are your choices.
Mm-hmm.
And you're limited to that if you do what you were trained to do.
Yeah.
And they were in a situation where they were in Connecticut, had a great church there, moved to Colorado through, you know, the blessings of God, and found a great church there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to drive 40 minutes one way, but it's still a great church.
Yeah.
So there, you know, if you have to, I mean, God always gives you provision.
Yeah.
For
and many
things.
Times, it's if you're in one of those scenarios, I think, where you have to be in like a very large urban environment, at least oftentimes there's many options for you to look for a good church to find because there's
mm-hmm.
such a large population. So let's go to our next point. So this is point D, right? Understand your financial situation. Understand your financial situation. Brian, you want to read there Proverbs 27:23?
Know well the condition of your flocks and give attention to your herds.
Good job. I knew one of the Brians would grab me.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Were you looking at him?
I just looked down.
All right.
Brian.
Maybe Brian can get the next one.
Yeah, that'd be great. Brian, you want to read Proverbs 16:8?
Yeah, sure. Better is a little with righteousness. Great venues with
interest. Yeah, good. So we want to know well the condition of our flocks and give attention, right? So why is that so important? Like we're talking about marriage and potential, right, being good stewards. Why is it so important to assess our wealth and what might be some downsides of not knowing this condition of our finances?
So you don't balance check.
Mm-hmm. That would be the obvious one, right?
And, I mean, sometimes you know if you're getting cheated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, if you're just paying your credit card bill every month blindly and not going over what you bought or what you didn't buy, you may not notice the random $32 charge
people
to the Philippines for music or whatever.
Yeah.
I know really in the world of subscription services where might sign up for something, say, I get 3 months free if I sign up here.
Yes.
And then not realize, okay, it leaves you signed up and you don't go in and
mm-hmm.
cancel. And everything's a subscription nowadays.
Yeah.
Like, it's so easy just to
click
something on your phone. And if you're not watching your finances,
yes.
it can really add up.
Yeah.
You no longer get the promo rate.
Yeah, right.
Regular.
Disney Plus costs this much.
Or on the flip side of that too, like I've noticed if I've been lazy with my budget and
mm-hmm.
haven't been balancing it the way I should, like I get extra careful with how I spend money because I'm not 100% sure it's there because I haven't
mm-hmm.
looked. And then when I go in and look, I'm like, oh man, I had these different categories that I didn't spend nearly as much as I expected to. So now that money should be spent on something that can further me along somehow, but it's just been sitting in my bank account unused.
Happens to me all the time. Just I have lots of money left over in my every category. That's true.
Right. It helps you assess how much you can be giving to
exactly.
How much you should be giving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Right. Anything marriage wise, like could be good or bad, come from not knowing the condition?
I think if you don't know the condition, if said expense or item that probably was on the table comes up, then you try to have that communication. It's like, hey, we talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's still a good idea? And it's like, well, where are we? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the short term and then there's the long term. Like, I think one conversation we have a lot is if we're saving and accruing savings, well, but what are we saving it for? Right? You may have five things that this would be, each one of these would be a good way to make use of this, right? Trying to. What would be the best stewardship of that? All right, so here we go. What does it look like in practice? All right.
Creating time to manage your finances, make a budget.
Okay.
Great to look at it together.
Got the budget word in. And what do you guys think? Do you guys generally work the budget together? Do you have one person that's primarily responsible for it? If you're a budget family, how's that?
Well, so like right now, he's primarily handled all of the bills and the budget and everything. 12 weeks from now, he's not even going to be in the same country as I am.
Yeah. It's going to be hard. He'll still do it, I'm sure.
But and like, you know, when we got married, we took Financial Peace University as a part of our marriage counseling, which was incredibly intelligent on our part. And like we had come up with, okay, if it's over $50, we're going to talk about it before you buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a year ago, he was on military orders out in the field, no access to his phone. I totaled the car. And so here I have to buy a car without my husband's knowledge. And okay, by the way, don't check your credit report because I ran your credit for a car. And things like that. So like, this past year, we've really had to rely on one another more than we did at the beginning of our marriage, because I'm going to have to be taking over that. He's going to be in a foreign country and not necessarily have access or communication or anything like that. He has to like fully trust me that I'm not going to go and, you know, buy 1,000 chickens, like I keep joking that I'm going to.
Each one is less than $50. So
she's worried about it, but I'm sure she's got it.
Yeah.
You know, but
yeah.
And so like we have to have that level of trust, and I also have to trust him that, you know, he's not gonna go to like the PX on whatever base he's at and buy 30 bags of Cheetos.
Is that temptation?
It's very tempting.
Very tempting.
I don't know what you can buy at a PX.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, sorry. I don't know if you can buy chicken.
Yeah.
But, so like we have to have that level of trust, and that's going to have to be a condition of our marriage.
Yeah, so you got that unusual situation where like you're having to manage it apart from one another. What about if you're daily together? What makes it work well? What is it difficult when you're budgeting?
This could probably look different with each marriage and situation, but like, you know, I think whether one person's kind of like doing most of the work to get that budget like in place, and then you just have a discussion over the different items, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like as long as it's like actually a discussion and not just one person telling the other how it's going to go, right? Or whether it's like, you know, you guys both have pieces in building that budget, but you know, I think in a marriage there obviously has to be discussion about money, whether you want there to be or not. There always is, right? Like this scenario at the beginning, there's a discussion about money, but it's after the fact, and it's not a pretty one,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So you have to find a way to discuss that budget
mm-hmm.
together somehow.
For sure. So there has to be a regular time where you're discussing it.
So we use every dollar because you can. We have it both on our phones, and then I can log on the computer and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do most all of our budgeting,
mm-hmm.
And then David checks it. I don't know how often, but one thing we've really had to we have very different views on how to spend money,
mm-hmm.
and so that has been something that for me having to learn how he wants me to spend the money
mm-hmm.
Has been a hurdle that I've had to. Get
mm-hmm.
over. But we've had really tough conversations in the last year. We've really much been on the same page
mm-hmm.
as far as where we're spending our money and where is it's going and how it's being spent and the way that
yeah.
So definitely I think when you get married and just kind of the trial and error of figuring it out,
mm-hmm.
figuring out what works for you, because we've used lots of different ways of doing it, paper and pen, and that works really well for him, but I can't track paper and pen.
Yeah.
Whereas the electronic works probably a lot better for me than it does for him.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like every dollar.
Would you say, because you mentioned two things, like you had different views. So like with the, there's the knowing the condition, like the having the budget, having the every dollar that tells you where the money is, where it's being spent on what. And then there's the views on how we ought to, right? The priorities. I mean, do you think those two are both, which one does the every dollar help with the most or least, or what's been just following up? Like, when you have budget talks, what do you tend to spend your time on more? This is just for everybody. The knowing the condition, like, do we have enough money for this? Or the priorities, like, we need to be spending the money in this area versus this area. An example might be you've got giving that you can do, so maybe you're supporting... You're giving to the church or supporting other maybe missionaries, different people. We have a compassion child. You've got clothing for your kids. You know, you've got saving for college. You have all these. There's knowing the condition, and then there's the prioritizing of it. Right? If you took the financial piece, right, there's a certain, he wants the baby steps always in order type of thing. What do you guys think? Where do you generally spend the most time or benefit from talking about the priorities of where you ought to be spending it, or just the knowing the condition of where it's being spent?
I think early in our marriage we spent a lot more time on the latter, and it wasn't as probably fruitful or positive as a discussion, because that do we have enough can be different in
mm-hmm.
opinion pretty quickly. Like, because do we have enough? Well, it depends on if we want to skimp on this item over here
mm-hmm.
or not, you know. And so, but the other is a lot more proactive, and I think
mm-hmm.
we've later in our marriage learned to, hey, this is where we'd like it to go. Hopefully we can make that happen. And,
yeah.
You know, let's just reevaluate again,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe we took this item off of there and then we move on to the next, but like, this is where we'd like it to go. It leads to a lot more positive discussion, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me it's kind of the same thing, because I don't think I truly know the condition unless I know where it's going to, like, and if it's going to the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if I don't know all that, then I don't think I truly know the condition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think something that was really eye-opening for me when I was first constructing a budget was I made the budget, just figured out what I needed to dial in on my upper levels of this much for groceries, this much for everything, and rent, and all that, and by month, and just broke it down piece by piece. And then I looked at my last month's bill statement from my credit, from my debit card, and I saw how the mismatch
mm-hmm.
between the two.
Yeah.
And I was like,
Yeah.
That felt highly convicting in that moment.
Yeah.
So just prepare yourself for that. You know,
yeah.
But that was good.
Yeah, and I think biblically the thing we want to take away is that the goal of there's not specific guidance on how to do it, right? We're not saying it has to be done this way, but it's wise to know, right? Have a good understanding, both you and your spouse, what condition your finances are in, you know, and what we have, how much we have, how much we're spending, how much is coming in, those type of things.
And having those priorities in line, you know, having like agreeing on those priorities, you up for myself. I don't have to agree with anybody, but like, mm-hmm. you know, I get to establish my own priorities. But it takes the guesswork or the confliction out of each month. Like, oh, this extra money, this has mm-hmm. to go here because that's what my current priority is. Like,
yeah.
I don't have to think about where that extra money goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you have budgeters and trackers.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, they set a budget and their goals to try to reach. I think what we've done is we've just tracked our spending.
Mm-hmm.
So we know where the money goes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're able to reevaluate, you know, after a year, do we like where we spent our money?
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that's kind of what we do. And then we kind of got into a rhythm of kind of an informal budget began to develop
mm-hmm.
as we just kind of tracked where the money went.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not based off, we're going to just spend $100 on food. That's our budget. It's just reality kind of
right.
forced us to contour
yeah.
it to where it needed to be. And then, yeah, then from there, we were able to kind of put in different objectives like saving for retirement and college and
mm-hmm.
giving. And
yeah. Yeah, and in a sense, like you said, there.
But we know where the money's going.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's kind of important because you can detect fraud and
mm-hmm.
overages and some of those
yeah,
things.
Yeah, and I think like knowing where it's going, like you're saying, and then like knowing whether you're spending above or below. It's like one just very basic thing. Are we spending more or less than we're making?
Yeah.
Is it very, just if you're spending less, then it's more about prioritizing.
Yeah.
You're doing great. If you're spending more, then you're in it's a lot more urgent need to figure
yeah.
out what's going on because it's,
yeah.
it's being a poor steward of what God's given us because we're wasting it away, not knowing what's happening to it, and we're becoming more and more in debt or in servitude, not being able to freely give and use it the way God's created.
I would say, too, it's important that both people know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You just never know what will happen. And
mm-hmm.
if the other party just doesn't have a clue of where the accounts are,
mm-hmm.
What savings accounts are open.
Mm-hmm.
If something happens to the other person, they're just at a total loss.
Yeah. Yes. I think one thing when it says, what does this look like in practice, is I know many people that use that either intentionally, they have so many, the money is spread out, separate accounts. So that's something that we'll talk about later. But like, and one common statistic that like the Ramsey mentions is that people that are struggling financially often hide purchases
yeah.
from the spouse.
Yeah.
Or you know, it's easier to do if they have separate accounts. So
mm-hmm.
it becomes more and more of an issue of like, does the other person know where our money is going? And so part of that, how you actually set it up, where are the accounts, how much is in there, is a really crucial part of knowing the condition of your flocks. Because you may know what's all in the your accounts. If you have them separate, that makes it tricky. Or if you've got insurance or life insurance or just different accounts, retirement accounts, knowing where all those are. And are we saving for that? Yes, it's in, where is it? Well, it's in this account over here. And that's, yeah. Our kids ask, do I have any money? You know, where is it? You know, are we saving for college? Yeah. So we go through kind of the process, talk to them, help educate them. So this last one, I think, would be a good one to wrap up. But Proverbs 16:8, better is a little with righteousness than great revenues with injustice. So great revenues with injustice. What are some ways? How could we make great revenues with injustice?
Dealing drugs.
Dealing drugs. Yes. He's heard.
I've heard.
So illegal enterprises.
We're talking about those pyramid schemes of the people under you that you're making money off of are suffering because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be an injustice.
Mm-hmm.
But wouldn't the idea of making more money to better yourself be injustice? Then that'd be illegal to be injustice, right? Like in
continue.
Well, like
greed,
mm-hmm.
which is a sin.
Mm-hmm.
If your main goal is to make more and more money, just to better yourself.
Yeah, the motivation right? The motivation in the heart as to what's driving you, right? That's where the sin begins, for sure. So if you make a lot of money out purely motivated by greed, then that's, right? It's better to have a little bit, but have a righteous attitude.
I think in some jobs, for instance, like with our company, our clock-in times are literally on our phones, and mm-hmm. we work remotely. We may have to work like from home with our computers, doing invoices and that kind of thing. And so it's like, you have to maintain the level of integrity. It's like, I'm on the clock, I have mm-hmm. to work. Mm-hmm. Or it's like, I know that break time's over, you gotta pick up that tool again. Mm-hmm. You know, but it could be really easy. It's like, well, nobody's watching me. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but you have to make sure your level of productivity is always there, and you're earning that dollar. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, yeah.
Yeah.
So it would be unjust for me to be like, well, you know, I can ease up, or, well, I'm slipping into overtime, and that's okay, mm-hmm. you know, where it's like, well, yeah, but are you still producing? Mm-hmm. Or do you need to get off the clock?
Yeah.
There was an older couple that I know of, and they were notorious for being very stingy and very frugal with their money. They didn't do any improvements on their house. They didn't do any improvements on their machinery and nothing. And so they both passed away, and they had millions in their bank account, but yet none of their, and not that it's all about showing, but they weren't being good stewards of mm-hmm. their house, of their machinery, you know, they were just.
Yeah.
And it's like, but you had the money mm-hmm. and you could have made those improvements and been productive with it, but it just, it in the bank.
Yeah, there's a certain psychology that, you know, sometimes there's a greed that seeks to live in excess, but sometimes there's a hoarding mentality that, like you said, won't spend a penny on anything, but they're still working to accrue and accrue and accrue. And yeah. Yeah.
I'm reminded, I don't know if Emporia knew about Marguerite Nicolet. She died like, I want to say, close to 30 years ago. But Marguerite Nicolet owned all of the Dairy Queens in Wichita. And she also happened to go to the church that I went to. And when I was a little kid, I would sit quiet for Marguerite Nicolet because I got a dilly bar. I would not sit quiet for my grandparents, but if you put me next to her, I was quiet. But everyone thought that she was poor, because she would eat at Dairy Queen for dinner, and she would get like their hamburger or whatever, and she would take the lettuce off of it, and she would make that her salad for lunch the next day. And based off of those like habits that she had like trained herself, mm-hmm. when she passed away, like she fully funded the new addition at mm-hmm. Carpenter Place, and it's named after her. And just was a huge philanthropist with like all of this money. And like when somebody asked her when she was close to dying, well, you know, you had all of this money, why didn't you like mm-hmm. enjoy life a little mm-hmm. more? Like, why did you drive a 20-year-old car and, mm-hmm. and things like that? And she's like, because I couldn't consciously know that I was taking it away from the charities that I was leaving mm-hmm. all of the money to.
Yeah.
And like that was, I mean, she died when I was like 8 or 9, but that was mm-hmm. impactful for
yeah.
me.
Yeah, and it's powerful that you mentioned that she had a plan for what she was going to do with the money. And that's a big differentiator. It's not that she was saving it because she wanted to keep it as long as possible and get as much as possible, right? She wanted to sacrifice for a certain purpose, right? She had a good stewardship in mind, right? I think about if you're in any kind of sales, right? There's a lot of, just like you talked about, integrity and honesty, right? You might be able to make a lot more sales hiding whatever is the downsides of your product, right? So there's lots of ways in which we could be seeking to grow in our wealth, but cutting corners, lacking integrity in those ways. Well, okay, we'll get into a couple of case studies next time. So let's pray and we'll move on to our worship. Father, I just thank you for the wisdom that you have in your word about money. And I thank you that money is so revealing, that you show us where our priorities are, what our cares and our desires are by helping us to see where we're spending our money. I pray that this this next week and this next month, you just help us to know well the condition of our finances. How are we using the money that you've given us, and are we using it in a way that's bringing glory to you and growing your kingdom? Are we blessing others around us? Are we blessing our family? Are we blessing our church? Are we being faithful, working hard? Help us to apply these principles by your Holy Spirit, and help us to continually worship you this morning as we continue our service in your name.